Welcome to the Wealthsteading Podcast. This is episode 26. It's September 15th, 2014. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager of InvestableWealth.com. This podcast is all about helping you build your net worth so you can live your life free and independent, so you can do the things that you were put on this earth to do. We talk about all things related to wealth, stock trading, saving, investing, earning. If you're new to the podcast, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to the first 10 episodes. That's where I lay out and develop for you what I call my 10 wealth-building principles. These 10 principles aren't something I read in a book or something I heard about. These 10 skills or these 10 principles are what I attribute my financial independence to. These are the 10 principles that I was able to learn and integrate into my life, and I not only believe that they're the foundation to my wealth, but I believe that if anybody practices them, they can have as much or more success as I've had. So be sure you review those 10 wealth-building principles, and then in each subsequent episode that I record, even if I don't explicitly relate back to those 10 wealth-building principles, they're in the framework for what I'm discussing in the podcast, and they're the essential elements of where I go back to answer the questions or to talk about the topics of the day that we discuss on these episodes. Well, hey, it's always a pleasure to hear from you listeners. I appreciate getting your comments and emails. When I started this podcast a little more than 9 weeks ago, I wasn't sure if anybody would listen. I was frustrated that I felt that there wasn't a podcast out there that was addressing specifically my message, which is that the middle-class lifestyle can lead to a wealthy and a healthy lifestyle, and that if you're living in America and you have at least average intelligence and average abilities, then I truly believe you can become financially independent. I'm not trying to sell you anything, not trying to hawk you any products. I don't have a book, don't charge for my website, none of that. But I honestly believe if you do go back and you listen to those 10 principles that I discuss, and you listen to this podcast and you apply these things in your life, you learn how to increase your earnings, you learn how to be a disciplined saver, you use wisdom and prudence in your investing, then yes, I believe that the average American can become financially independent. And although there are a lot of good financial or investment podcasts out there, I really don't hear people, particularly with my experience, someone that's came up from the middle class or from the blue-collar background. What I wanted to present was my story, just a story of an average everyday Joe that believed in the American dream, still do believe in the American dream, that believes that the middle class isn't dead, and believes that with a little bit of effort and some discipline and wisdom, you can lead the type of life that you want to. You don't have to spend all your days working for the man. So that's the gospel message that I wanted to preach, and wanted to give you everyday examples from my lifestyle, from my past 30 years, in and out of the workplace, my nearly 30 years of investing. I wanted to give you those tips and that feedback. I want to help you on your course to a wealthy and a healthy lifestyle. Like I've said before, I want you to have personal freedom. The more people there are out there like me, well, there's strength in numbers. Maybe if there's enough of us, we can stop the government from taxing us, from extorting our money, and from wasting it on stupid programs. Here at the Wealthsteading Podcast, I want to teach you that wealth is a lifestyle. That's wealth building principle number 10. Don't think of money as evil. Don't think of wealth as something the other guy has and you don't. Don't be envious. Go out there and earn it. Go out there and learn how to develop it yourself. Money may not buy happiness, but it can buy freedom. And freedom is your God-given right, so don't let anybody take it away from you. Well, I got off on a tangent. I want to stop preaching. What I wanted to say is that I love hearing from the listeners. Occasionally, I get a chance to meet some of you. When I started this podcast, I didn't know if anybody would really listen. Well, I'm pleasantly surprised at how many listeners we do have, but what surprises me even more is the number of you, and there have been many, that have come back and told me that you not only listen, but your teenagers are listening in as well. Now, in some cases, the parents are requiring the kids to listen. In other cases, the kids are just listening in because they're in the car with dad or mom or because they think the topic's interesting. Well, I think that's fantastic. And while this podcast is primarily directed at adults, my target market is probably those people that are in their, say, 30s to 50s. That's really the audience I'm reaching out to, because that's the group that I think is receptive to my message, and it's also the group that I think that it's still time for you to learn and to develop and to build your wealth. But I'm blown away by the number of young adults and teenagers that are listening to this podcast, and I sincerely promise you, if you apply these things in your life, you will be amazed at how enriched you'll become. And I just don't mean monetary things. Remember, we stress in this podcast that it's not about the money. It's about the freedom and the liberty that you can buy with that money. That's what makes a difference. Allowing you to be the person you are. Allowing you to fulfill that very special mission that only you uniquely were put on this earth to do. So a big welcome to all those young people that are listening to the show. Especially want to do a shout out to a young man named Todd. I've had the privilege of meeting him on a couple occasions. He lives kind of local to me. He's in the next valley over from where I live. He's got great parents. I've not only seen him at some events, but I've been to his home as well. He's the kind of young man that has a bright future. And I encourage him and other teenagers like him to keep pushing along. Don't limit your education to just what they teach you at school. It's that informal education. It's learning all those skills and abilities, things you can do with your own hands, ways that you can enhance your mind, the discipline of saving and investing. These are all great skills. You guys are starting out really young to learn them. I congratulate you. You're going to be much farther ahead of the game than I was. And again, really, as I meet more of you listeners, you really blow me away. I'm honored to have you in my audience. In fact, today I talked to a young couple. It was kind of a spontaneous conversation, and I was very impressed with where they are and their personal financial goals. Now, this young couple really impressed me because I know a lot of you out there say, well, hey, John, sure, you say you're financially independent, but you're 50 years old, you're 53 years old, you probably made a lot of money over the years and blah, 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 blah. You know how the excuse makers go. They can never take things at face value because they haven't done something they don't think someone else can, because someone else has done something they haven't done, then those people either cheated or those people got lucky or whatever, blah, 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 blah. Well, yes, over my career, I have gotten lucky. But I attribute to where I'm at because of discipline and wisdom. And I just love meeting and talking to young couples that are living the kind of disciplined life that my wife and I lived. So when you look at me and you say, oh, that's easy for you to say, John, you have money, you have this, you have that. Well, I didn't always have that. I didn't have some big fancy corporate executive job. I didn't win the lottery. I didn't get an inheritance. I lived a frugal, smart lifestyle. And today I talked to some young listeners, some people that are right out of the audience of this podcast. We had a phone conversation, and I want to share a little bit about them. Now, I'm not going to reveal their identity or really any hard numbers that we talked about. They're not clients of mine. This was just a casual conversation that we had. But they're doing all the right things. They're just young kids. And when I say kids, I don't know. They're like 25. They're young. But get this. They both have college degrees. That showed that they had the discipline to go out and do something with their life, number one. What's more impressive than that? Number two is they have zero, I said zero, student loans. No student loan debt whatsoever. They cash flowed their own way through school. Now, they had some help with parents and grandparents, stuff like that, but they also worked and they put themselves through school. Now, that's what I've encouraged my kids to do, to put themselves through school. And I truly believe, and I think it's with my kids as well as I believe it's with this young couple that I talked to, by going through school and funding your own way, by cash flowing your own way through your 4 years of college, you not only come out there with a college education, but more importantly, you come out of school with discipline, with the ability to work, with the ability to manage your money, with the ability to know that someone's just not going to give you something. I suspect you learn more from the experience of working and putting yourself through school than you actually learn at the university itself. Well, let me tell you more about this young couple. Not only do they not have any student loans, they are really weird. Yeah, they're really strange. They're unlike all these other normal people in America. See, this young couple, they're really freaks. You want to know how weird and strange they are? They have no credit card debt. Zero. Oh, you know what? Automobile debt? None. They don't owe anything on a car. No student loans. No credit card debt. No car loans. Oh, I know you're saying, okay, yes, yeah, so they must be house poor. They must live in a big McMansion, and they're barely making the payments because the mortgage is so high. No, wrong again. You know how smart this young couple is? They're renting. Oh, yeah, I know. Interest rates are low. It's a great time to own a house, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what? These guys are just starting out in their careers. They're very wise. They don't necessarily know where they're going to be in another year or two. They haven't started their family yet. It's just the two of them. They don't need a big house. So they're renting. They're renting because they want to save up, because they want to have a substantial down payment on that first home that they buy. They want to be able to have a nice down payment so they can buy just a modest home in a nice, safe environment where they can start raising their family. They don't want anything extravagant. Just a nice home that's in a safe area, that's not too far from work. Some place they can put down roots. Now, these kids are brilliant. Think about that. This is the same type of lifestyle that my wife and I laid down for ourselves like almost 30 years ago. Now, neither one of these kids, and I keep calling them kids because I'm old enough to be their father, so forgive me for that, but that's one of the advantages to being an old man. You get to call everybody a kid. Now, these kids, okay, I'm going to let you in on a little secret, and I don't mean any disrespect to them, but they're not rocket scientists. You know, they're the kind of kids that could be my kids. I'm not a rocket scientist. I don't have some brainiac IQ. I'm not in Mensa. Just an average guy. I'm an average guy that can read and write and count, and I can apply common sense, and that's how I built my wealth. And that's the same thing these two young adults are doing. They're not geniuses. They're not working for huge, you know, biotech companies. They don't have PhDs and master's degrees. They're just a couple of middle-class kids whose parents and grandparents instilled in them frugality, instilled in them discipline, taught them that they don't have to have everything today, that they can wait a little bit, that they can put off immediate joy and satisfaction, that they don't have to have everything today. You know, in effect, they're just not spoiled brats. Now, as I look at their overall household income, the fact that they're both college graduates, they should have a higher income than they do. And part of the counsel I talked to them about was getting that income up. Now, it isn't bad, don't get me wrong, but it could be better. They should have a higher income, and they're working towards that. But you know what? They've done everything else absolutely right. They've hit the ball out of the ballpark. This young married couple, for as young as they are, they have a substantial net worth. They're not only putting away a lot of cash for a nice down payment on their home, they're also putting away money for retirement in their 401k plans, in their tax-advantaged accounts like Roth or traditional IRAs. These are really smart kids. They're doing extremely well. And I don't mean just for someone in their age bracket. I mean they're doing extremely well for just your average middle-class American. Now, the census data that I have starts at age 35, and these guys are significantly younger than that. They're like, say, 25. The average household net worth for an American family that's age 35 and below, it's really pathetic. It's under $10,000. It's somewhere, I don't know, $8,000, $9,000, something like that. When you think what little that buys, that's really a pathetic number. But these kids, you know what? They're significantly above that. Let's look at the overall. If we look at all households in America, the average net worth for all households in America, and net worth is being your assets minus your liabilities. If you had to sell everything you own and then pay off all your bills with it, whatever money you have left over, and many of you, I know, wouldn't have any money left over, but for that money that's left over, that's your net worth. Well, the average net worth for all households in America, all age levels, is only about $70,000. And frankly, I'm surprised it's that high. I think that's some money that's squirreled away in some 401k plans, and then since the real estate bubble has been reinflated, some people are starting to get equity in their homes again. So the average American of all age groups only has about $70,000. Well, this young couple, this guy and this girl that are like 25, that have only been out of college for a few years, they have a net worth of well over $100,000, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of like $120,000, right? And they're just kids. They don't have fantastic superhero jobs. They just have regular everyday jobs. So how can this young couple, who are literally just salt-of-the-earth people, just average, common, everyday kids, how can they have a net worth that's nearly twice what the average American household is, and when you look at their specific age group, it's like 1,000 times more? How can they have so much? Well, did you hear what I said when I first introduced them? College graduates. No student loan debt. No car debt. No credit card debt. No mortgage. They're renting. They're renting just a small place to fit their needs now because they're just a couple. There's just the two of them. They don't need a lot of space. They don't need a lot of yard. They don't need a big garage. They don't need to show off and try and keep up with the Joneses. You see, if you're familiar with Dave Ramsey's debt snowball, you know how you start paying the smallest debt off and then the next one, and then you attack the next one, and it's a snowball. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and pretty soon you've paid off your debt. Well, it works the same way and opposite. That's my wealth snowball. That's how I got to have my wealth. The same thing that this young couple's doing. They don't have any debt to begin with, so they don't have a debt snowball. They have a wealth snowball. Every month that they're not paying off a car, or every month that they're not paying off an overpriced mortgage on a home that they don't need, or every month that they're not paying a 20% interest rate on a credit card debt, every month they're not paying for a vacation that they didn't need to take, right? Every month they don't do that, they generate savings because they're out there earning, they're taking those earnings, and they're saving them. Now, they're not at the investment stage yet, and that's what's smart about this young man and this young woman. They're taking my advice. Remember, I talk about first be an earner, then be a saver, then be an investor. They're not investing in real estate. They're not really investing in stocks and things at this point. They're earning. They're investing in themselves. They're putting that money away in savings so that they'll have a substantial down payment on the home that they want. And they're just not running out and buying any old house. They're waiting until they can find a house that's right for them. They're waiting for the right opportunity to purchase. They're waiting to see if they can get a good deal. They're waiting to make sure that the property will be close to where they work, so that it fits into their lifestyle, so that it's around friends and family, people that they love and people that they want to associate with. Right now, they're good earners, they're fantastic savers, and someday they're going to be great investors. These are smart kids. And while I'm covering all the great things adorning their lifestyle, I also want to mention this. And I don't want to preach to anybody, but these kids, they're married. They're a married couple. They're not living together. Now, I don't know all their particular situation. I didn't talk to them about that. But I'm just telling you from what I heard in the conversation, they're married. They made a commitment to spend their life together. They took a marriage vow. They're working together. They're building their net worth together. They're building their life together. They plan on building a family together. Now, that may not sound like something that I should have to even talk about. That was something that was very commonplace, say, back in the 1950s. But today, so many people are not getting married. They're either just living together or they're living apart. They're not building anything together. And that ultimately drags down their wealth. That drags down their net worth. Two can live cheaper than one. So there's a synergy in being a couple. The value of a couple, of a man and woman together, the value there is greater than it would be if either were counted as separate individuals. So that's another good thing that this young man and woman are doing. And again, I don't want to get all preachy on you, but that's important. It's important to form a marriage. It's important to form a family unit. If you look at the middle-class millionaires in this country, these are just common everyday people that worked hard and saved their money. They're not movie stars. They're not famous people. They're just regular everyday people that had discipline. Well, the vast majority of them are married couples. I've said it before jokingly, but I really mean it. The fastest way to destroy your wealth is to have an ex-wife. That's the quickest way for a man to destroy his wealth. And I'm not picking on the ladies here, because if you drill down the statistics and you see the poorest households in our country are headed up by women, so these single women aren't doing well on their own either. Divorce and non-marriage, it hurts everybody. It hurts the kids, it hurts the mother, it hurts the father. It's equal opportunity misery. So again, I'll quit preaching. But congratulations to this young man and this young woman that I talked to today. Listeners from this audience, they're doing all the right things. Oh, and again, for any of you naysayers out there that think that this man and this woman are just probably making tons of money and you can't do it and blah, blah, blah. As I mentioned before, they have a significantly higher net worth than they should have, given their age, and it's also given their income. Although they're college educated, they're not making much more than the average household income. Average household income is $50,000. They're not too much higher than that. So they're making a little bit more than the average family, and yet they have an extremely high net worth, and they're not even 30 years old yet. So what's your excuse? Get on the ball. Learn from this young couple. And again, I want to stress the things that they're doing, they're the things that I did in my life. They're the things that my wife and I did in our life. Go back and listen to the first 10 episodes. Go back and listen to the 10 wealth-building principles. That's what these kids are doing. That's what they're practicing in their lives. And yet here they are in their mid-20s, and they already have a net worth of like $120,000. And if you don't have that, again, quit complaining. Don't be envious. Just do what these two kids are doing. Live a debt-free life. Live frugal. Save. You know, there are three simple steps to avoid poverty. And I usually don't talk about avoiding poverty because I like to study wealthy people. I like to study the middle-class millionaire. I don't like to study poor people. I like to study people that are doing the right thing. I don't like to study people that are doing the wrong thing. But I do want to bring this up, and if you've heard me give a public presentation, I usually refer to this statistic. Now, studies have showed this, and it's undeniable. If you do these three things, you'll avoid poverty. And I don't have the statistics exactly in front of me to give you the exact numbers, but I think it's something like, if you follow these three steps, you're almost guaranteed something like a 75% success rate of being solidly in the middle class. So it's not that you not only won't be poor, but you can have a middle class lifestyle. And again, a middle class lifestyle in America is currently around $50,000 a year. So what are these three steps? Well, I bring them up because they're very much like what that young couple that I just talked about. It's very much like their lifestyle. Number one, graduate from high school. Number two, don't have children until you get married. Number three, get a full-time job. So very simple. I'll say them again. Get a high school education. Don't have kids until you're married. Get a full-time job. If you do those three things, your probability of making somewhere close to $50,000, at least living in a middle-class lifestyle, are about 75%, and there's virtually almost no chance of you being below the poverty line. It's something like a 92% chance that you'll be above the poverty line. Now, that's an accurate statistic, and I bring it up because, again, I said it applies to that young couple I talked about. The reason they have such a high net worth is because they not only practice those things, but they want to step higher. They not only graduated from high school, they graduated from college. And when you factor in that they have no debt, that's why they're able to have such a high net worth at such a young age. It can be done, I promise you. So all of you listeners out there that are practicing this kind of lifestyle, what I call the wealth-setting lifestyle, good for you. Keep it up. Someday I hope you're filthy rich and you need me to manage all your excess wealth. Now let's finish up today's episode with a market review. Today, Investor's Business Daily changed the market status to uptrend under pressure. That's a red flag. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it today. It's unclear if a trend is developing or not. I don't want to go into a lot of detail and say a lot of things yet because I'm not sure what's going on. I think it is safe, though, to look at the NASDAQ and to see that today's action has definitely broken through a trend line. Since about early to mid-August, the NASDAQ was going up. It peaked out about maybe, the last 2 weeks or so. It hit its peak. And so the last 10 trading sessions are about there. It's been trading sideways. Today was decidedly a downward move. The NASDAQ was down over 1%. And it was also down in higher trade volume, close to 10% more trade volume than average. And again, that's typical what we've seen all year. The stocks go up in light trade, and then they come down in heavy, harder volume. But factoring in today's move of over 1%, and then about a half of a percent move downward on Friday, the NASDAQ has pretty much given up back all of its gains since mid-August. So these high-tech stocks, they're still a little bit above their 50-day moving average, which again, that's always a warning sign. If they break through that 50-day moving average, that wants to be an indication of maybe thin ice. And then the NASDAQ index is still trading above its double peak high, which it had hit back in, August. It hit its double peak high back in the beginning of June and then about the end of June. Today's low is still above that. So that'll be interesting to see. That's what we want to watch. If the NASDAQ breaks below that double peak high, which is about, let's call it 44.85. Today the NASDAQ closed at 45.18. If it closes below 44.85, then in my estimate, my forecast would be that it'll go through and it'll break through its 50-day moving average. Again, if it breaks through that, that puts it on thin ice. That perhaps might want to be a sell signal to you if you've already been long in the market and you're not out yet. But again, at this point, we have no way of knowing, but it has definitely broken its last 2 or 3 week trend. It's no longer going up. This may be because of Obama's recent announcement with the military actions he'll take in the Middle East. It could be because the dollar's been gaining strength. It could be because we're going to have another meeting of the Federal Reserve. Their open market committee will have an announcement on Wednesday. We have no real way of knowing, but we can look at the charts, and we can see that the NASDAQ is performing worse than more of the blue chip indices, like the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and then even the smaller cap stocks like the Russell 2000. They're more risky. They're performing even worse than the NASDAQ. So we don't necessarily know why, but what we can assume here is that there's a rotation. Professional investors, institutional investors, are rotating out of the more riskier stocks, the small cap stocks, the technology stocks, the biotech stocks. They're rotating out of those, and they're moving to more safer ground in the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500. Now remember, I mentioned safer. I didn't say safe. If you remember in previous episodes, we mentioned that even on the S&P 500, something like over 37% of those stocks were trading below their 50-day moving average. So that may be a safer harbor, but it's not a safe harbor. The S&P itself has had a bad couple of days and a bad couple of 2 weeks. Its office peak, which it hit maybe about 2 weeks ago, very similar to the NASDAQ. It's trading just above its 50-day moving average. And today's closing price on the S&P 500 actually did go below its previous high from back in July. So whenever I mentioned that the NASDAQ maybe had a little bit more room to run before it break through those through that support, and then it would probably hit its 50-day moving average, it looks like the S&P might be already past that support level, and over the next few days very much could break through its 50-day moving average. One other thing that I want to point out in reference to these blue-chip stocks, particularly the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Now, this is our 30 biggest and best companies in America, the blue of the blue chips. They pay high dividends. They're very stable companies. And a lot of people have been running to them for safety. And again, it appears that they're still even doing that now. They're selling stocks, the high techs, and the more risky stocks in the NASDAQ, because the NASDAQ is moving down faster in higher volume as opposed to the Dow, which is still trading relatively flat. So people are selling the risk and they're moving into these more safer investments. But I do want to point out, of those 30 blue chip stocks, only 7 of them are trading under what can be considered a fair value price per earnings valuation. And what I'm using here for that number is under 15. Generally, somewhere between 16, 16.8. That's the price per earnings. It's generally assumed to be somewhat of a historical average. And there's a lot baked into that. Don't just take that as gospel. People always throw those numbers around. Well, it's above or below the average. Remember, that average is based on over 100 years of history. So don't think that if something's trading below that, it's necessarily cheap or it's on sale. For illustrative purposes today, let's just assume that 16 would be a fair value point for a price per earnings ratio to determine the valuation of a stock. Well, assuming that's the case, you only have about 7 stocks that are trading below that out of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So that's companies, and we talked about these ones before. These are the same ones that are below their 50-day moving average. International Business Machine, Chevron, AT&T, Travelers Insurance, Verizon, ExxonMobil, Goldman Sachs. Those 7 blue chip stocks may possibly be trading under value. And I don't want to put the emphasis there. Where I want to put the emphasis is that that means that the other 23 stocks in the index, the vast majority of the stocks in the index, are all either fully or fairly priced, or they're overpriced. And the point I want to make is, although there's a rotation out of these riskier investments and everybody's piling their money into the blue chips, assuming that they're safe, well, how safe can they be if 27 out of 30 of them are probably either full priced or overpriced? That's where I want to just say there should be caution. And again, that's why I believe that you don't always have to be in the stock market. If you look at it and you say, hey, we're at all-time highs, these valuations look very pricey to me, I'm just going to move out and go into a money market or some type of cash equivalent until I get a better feel for what's going on in the marketplace. That's certainly where I'm sitting today, and I don't think that that's a bad position to hold. But again, you have to do what's right for you. I can't give you specific guidance or information on this podcast. Everything we talk about is just general in nature, so be cautious. Well, that's going to wrap it up for today's episode. I might have ranted and raved a little bit too much. I hope I wasn't too preachy for you. My intent is really to just provide you with honest, fact-filled information and to temper it with the wisdom and experience that I've gained as an individual investor over the last nearly 30 years, and information that I not only learned, but information that has been very profitable for me. And that information was just not information to gather for wisdom's sake. It was things that I was able to apply that today allow me to live a financially independent lifestyle. I think the wealth-steady message is unique. I appreciate you for listening. I'm going to do my best to keep providing you with this content and fill every episode with useful and actionable information. As always, you can contact me through the podcast website, which is wealthsteading.com. Until the next episode, this is John Pugliano, wishing you the very best of returns.